The Lifestylist, episode 205, featuring Lisa Evans.
I'm Luke Story. For the past 22 years, I've been relentlessly committed to my deepest passion, designing the ultimate lifestyle based on the most powerful principles of spirituality, health, psychology, and personal development. The Lifestylist Podcast is a show dedicated to sharing my discoveries and the experts behind them with you. Doing a podcast that focuses much of the time on health, it of course makes sense that I get a lot of questions from people about how to improve their mental performance and function. So everybody wants to know about the new smart drug and the new nootropic and the new fancy thing. And there are some things on the market that work, but there's one thing that's quite old, my friends, that works very well, and that's called lion's mane mushrooms. And my friends over at foursigmatic.com have created not only one of the most potent and legit lion's mane mushroom products, but also one that tastes really good and is really easy to use. Now, they've also snuck a couple other things in there to help its effectiveness, such as organic peppermint, rose hips, rhodiola root, and even a hint of stevia. Now, this one is going to knock your socks off. So if you want brain and nervous system support, if you want an all-natural cognitive enhancer, this stuff's been scientifically proven to boost your memory and concentration. So you can use this when you're doing things like recording a podcast intro or promo, such as I'm doing now, studying, reading, writing, or just chilling out. You don't actually have to be using your brain a lot to take lion's mane. It just makes you feel good. It's amazing stuff. So if you want to check this out, what you want to do is this. Get over to foursigmatic.com/Luke Story. That's foursigmatic.com/Luke Story. If you use the code over there in your cart, known as Luke Story, you're going to save 15% off your lion's mane elixir. So that's foursigmatic.com/Luke Story. Save 15% with the code Luke Story. Big ups to our sponsor, Organifi. You guys hear me talk about them all the time. You know why? Because they're awesome. I take two of their products almost every single day. That's the Organifi Green Juice. Usually take that in the morning. It's got a little matcha, all kinds of green superfoods, super delicious, alkalizing, energizing, easy to travel with. You don't waste money on like having juices go bad in your car, like trying to travel with a glass bottle and they don't let you take it through the TSA, you know, all the issues of being a healthy person and traveling, eliminated with the green juice. So good. I also like the Organifi Gold. This is what I use mostly in the evening at night to just relax. It's an anti-inflammatory drink that tastes delicious. It's got tons of turmeric and lemon balm and lion's mane and all kinds of rad herbs and mushrooms in there. And they've also got a biotic balance probiotic that's really fantastic. They have a plant-based protein. They got all kinds of good stuff over there. They have a red juice that's made with all the antioxidant-rich fruits and things like that that many of us are missing from our diet. So get over to Organifi.com/Luke and peep it out for yourself. That's Organifi with an I. If you go to Organifi.com/Luke and use the code Lifestylist at checkout, you will save 20%. It's a really great discount. So my top two, again, would be the green juice and the gold. But dig around the site and experiment. Try some different stuff out. Every once in a while, I'll make myself like a big red juice first thing in the morning and make up for all of the pigment-rich fruits that I am not eating. All right. Thanks so much for checking out Organifi.com/Luke.
Time to drop another episode of the Lifestylist Podcast. This is Luke Story from LukeStory.com, currently reporting from lovely Mount Shasta, California, where I just spent 4 days in deep immersion with former two-time Lifestylist Podcast guest, John Wineland. I am lit, to say the least, and I'm very excited to bring you today's episode with Lisa Evans. But before we jump into this conversation with Lisa, let's talk about LukeStory.com/store. That, my friends, is where you will find a highly curated, easy to navigate collection of every single health and wellness product that I believe in and personally use, including, of course, all of the sponsors of this here podcast. Next up, we've got an event. It's the Conscious Enterprises Live at One Hotel West Hollywood at 7 p.m. Friday, May 24th, where I will be participating in a panel discussion about the impact and introspection of entrepreneurship. That's Friday, May 24th. If you'd like to come, it's free, but you must RSVP quickly. You can find a link to that at lukestory.com/events. Next week's episode features Daniel Dubois and Whitney Tingle from Sakara Life, where they talk about how they built an empire based on feeding people healthy food. Don't want to miss that. And now on to today's episode. It's all about using the psychology of your fashion and your clothing to serve you and the world. Did you know how powerfully your clothing choices convey to others and to your subconscious mind, for that matter, about who you are and what you're all about? Or that you can actually modulate your mood, emotions, and even your own self-confidence by what you're wearing? Well, it turns out that you can. Today's show features Lisa Evans, one of Hollywood's most celebrated costume designers and stylists, and also just a really cool, down-to-earth, and highly conscious person. It's one of my favorite episodes I think I've ever recorded here. Because of the conversation, and also because Lisa and I share a history of working in the same town in a very similar industry. And she is a heavy hitter. Let me drop some of her credits on you. She's been costume designer more than 25 feature films, such as I Feel Pretty with Amy Schumer, Why Him, starring James Franco and Bryan Cranston, Zoolander 2, Trainwreck, Bridesmaids, Neighbors, starring Seth Rogen and Zac Efron, and 21 Jump Street, starring Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, as well as Get Him to the Greek, I Love You Man, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, This Is 40, 5-Year Engagement, and Scooby-Doo, among countless others. So as you can see by that resume, you've probably peed your pants laughing to some of the movies she's been costume designer on. She's also done more than 500 TV commercials, which is totally insane, coming from someone, as I said, like myself, who spent 17 years as a stylist in Hollywood. I don't know how many commercials I did, but let me just tell you, 500 is a lot, because commercials are a lot of work and they go on for days and days. So she's worked for Coca-Cola, AT&T, Verizon, Hewlett-Packard, Samsung, GM, Ford, MasterCard, Porsche, Kellogg's, and countless others, right? So this woman has put in some work. Her work in films and celebrities have been seen in such illustrious publications as Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, People, Nylon, and InStyle, as well on the red carpet of events from the Academy Awards to the Grammys and everywhere in between. She is what you call in Hollywood a creative genius. And she's not only an artist in terms of her fashion, but also her philosophy in life. So if you're ready to connect with a deeper part of yourself through what happens on the outside and find your purpose, this is the one you want to listen to. Here's what we cover specifically: how clothing can make or break your day, how coming up with the initial design concept and the fitting that takes place before a film contributes to how the actor embodies their character, and how this relates to you in your real life, what it's like to work with method actors, which is a really fascinating part of this conversation. There's a lot of sort of behind the curtain look at the Hollywood process, and the creative process, not only for her as a costume designer, but for the actors and everyone involved in films. And I'm a huge fan of film, so this was fascinating to me. And then why some of the most beautiful, successful, and famous people are also some of the most insecure. Lisa's styling philosophy, how the shapes we wear help us get out of our comfort zone and over time lead us to a general feeling of well-being and improve our chances of success in every metric of our lives. How the artistic intention of our clothing contributes to the way we express ourselves, not letting your clothes stop you from doing anything you want to do in your life. And finally, the story of how Lisa co-founded Style Fund with her friend Amy Schumer with the mission to improve women's process of getting dressed by helping them better understand their individual silhouettes. So now I want you to take a moment to put on your most fly outfit, sit back, and take in this fun and fashion-informed conversation with Miss Lisa Evans. Lisa Evans, welcome to the Lifestylist Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So per usual, those of you listening, we just had a whole pre-interview. We were in the kitchen shooting the shit for like an hour. And I'm always thinking, man, I just need to throw a mic on someone when they walk through the door and just go, hey, we're recording, and then just start. I guess we'd have to carry around the little recorder, but it was really fun getting to know you, kind of doing a pre-interview. It's nice when you have the opportunity to spend a little time with someone.
Yeah, I feel the same. I've always wanted to meet you, so it's a great opportunity today.
Awesome. Just to
come and chat.
So you come from the world to a degree, at least, that I came out of. You're still in it, the Hollywood machine, working on a zillion films as a costume designer, Bridesmaids, Powder, Get Him to the Greek, Sarah Marshall, American Pie, Zoolander 2. I mean, your IMDb resume is very extensive. You know, and as we talked about earlier, I did my time in Hollywood on the styling side. And so it's interesting, though, because you're really the first person that I've interviewed from that world.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I'm excited. And it's going to be tempting for me to not just talk about all that stuff too much, you know, because I know you have so much more to offer and so much more going on and are doing some other exciting projects and things like that. But yeah, I've done one show with my partner at School of Style, Lauren Messiah, called The Psychology of Style. And we talked about, she does a lot of personal styling and helps women learn how to dress themselves for their body type and all this kind of stuff. So we did kind of more of the inner side of style. Mm. But other than that, I've not really talked about fashion or anything. It's like, you know, I'm talking about EMFs or meditation or, you know, some of the things that I cover. So I'm excited.
Also important when it comes to fashion.
Right, right, mm-hmm. right. Mm-hmm. So let's kind of start at the beginning, Lisa. How did you get into the game of working as a costume designer? And maybe even just tell people that are listening, you know, there might be a meditating yogi listening and they're like, I don't even know what a costume designer is. So give us a little background on how you got into it and what that career looks like.
Initially, I grew up in the fashion business. My mother was a fashion designer and I sort of always loved fashion. I saw it more as art and I loved to paint and I loved to go to vintage stores and I loved the process of my mother really picking out fabrics and morphing them into these incredible pieces of clothing that people would wear. And it's funny how I got into film. It's not something I ever even really knew about. Of course, I loved films growing up, but it wasn't that I equated that there was a job that was fashion-ish related. But I, of course, as a 19-year-old girl, was going to art school and, of course, got back into fashion and met someone who worked in the film business and suddenly it clicked. I was like, wait a minute, fashion, characters, clothing, costume design, film. Oh, this is interesting. And so I called up the one person I knew in the film business, which was my godmother. And she had been a production designer and a director and a writer. And she got me an internship with a costume designer. I was going to work for free on a video for Phil Collins.
Oh my God, that's funny.
But I was very excited and yeah. She gave me the address, come to the costume house. It was Motion Picture Costume Company. And I showed up that day and it was so immediate that I walked into this warehouse of floor to ceiling costumes from every period. And I immediately felt somehow I was in the right place. And this was, it just sparked my interest to such a point where I was like, wait, I'm going to dive in deep here and see what this is all about and understand, you know, what building characters is like for film and how that relates to fashion and use kind of my knowledge and through osmosis of growing up in fashion and segue into film and styling and being a costume designer as well as a private stylist. So from that point, I just fell in love with it. I loved everything about it. It's really, you are initially reading the script when we're talking about costume design. You're reading the script. You're conceiving who these people are and why they wear the clothes they do. And because I came from a fashion background, I really felt like there was something I could offer beyond just building characters, which is in contemporary film, there's always a fashion element. To understand why people wear the clothes they do, where they came from, how clothing essentially says who they are as humans, to not only as the character in the film, but to the world at large. And I just really felt it was the right place for me. And from there, I kind of played around with not only building characters, but evoking certain emotions from these characters, So when you see someone like Kristen Wiig's character in Bridesmaids, you know, with skirts a little short and jackets a little small, you begin to feel a level of desperation or a vulnerability or just a fish out of water. And all the things about her, people really resonated with and they were rooting for her. And as a result of that, you know, it just kind of reaffirmed the idea to me that clothing so much can make or break your day or create a feeling that you want to portray to the world. And over time, I just thought, how interesting, how great to get in deep like that and understand how much clothing can support us and or how much it can affect us positively or negatively. And really being a costume designer has been a great joy of mine from not just the creative, but from the psychological aspects of it, as I just explained, but from the collaboration portion of it too, you know, working with directors and production designers and cinematographers and actors and just building something better than you could ever imagine or conceive of on your own. That kind of collaboration with a creative team is truly a thrilling experience.
That's so interesting, man. There's mm-hmm. so many different directions I want to go there. I guess that's why I always keep a pen next to me in case mm-hmm. I'm, you know, somebody gives me a 5-minute synopsis and I'm like, oh, there's 500 ways to go there. I think it's really interesting what you were saying, how you can take a nuance with the character and have, you know, a sort of ill-fitted jacket and a short skirt, and that character then has this feeling of not fitting in or being awkward or something like that. Do you think when you dress an actor as a character and you're thinking about things in such a nuanced way, are you affecting their ability to get into the role more and into character more? Because they're like, oh God, I'm not just pretending like I'm this person. I actually look and feel like this person because of the way that I'm dressed.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think funny. I never thought about that.
Yeah, I think one of my favorite parts of the film itself is first the inception of the design concept, and then second, the initial fitting where we find the character that is so sometimes well written in the script and sometimes just sort of vaguely alluded to in the script. And you really work with the actor to find, you know, what are the characteristics of this character that you can delineate? You know, it's just the idea that once you get it right, you feel it immediately. The person stands differently. They act differently. They're like, yes, I know this person. I know how to portray them.
Do you ever work with actors where they're staying in character even when they're not on camera? Like, do they ever come into the fitting and use the accent and the, you know, sort of the FX of the character? I always hear about that. Like, I think it's called method acting or something, where they kind of like, they're that person the entire time. Does that ever happen in your world?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's so fun because you feel like you're really immersed into it. And sometimes it's hard to understand where the character ends and the person lives. But it's such a creative process and there's so few rules. And so it's up to all of us as a creative team to find our way that makes sense on that film. You know, so sometimes method acting is a really big part of it for someone's ability to even get into being that person.
It must be really fun working, because so many of the films you worked on are comedies, and some of the best ones. I mean, there's really some of the funniest movies in Hollywood's ever produced thus far. I mean, are you on set just roll? I know, you know, when they show the bloopers at the end of some films like this, you're like, oh my God, I want to be on set. It looks so fun. I mean, aside from the obvious, you know, stress and pressure involved in like a production that has deadlines and budgets and all this stuff, which can be stressful, I know. But I mean, are you laughing your ass off all the time because of the hijinks that are going on and working on comedies and stuff?
I mean, yes, occasionally we are all laughing, and I'm terrible to have on set because I cannot contain myself. But, you know, sometimes it's more technical than it appears. And sometimes it is just hilarious. And people say funny things and, you know, people make mistakes and they end up as happy accidents. People make mistakes and it's a blooper. And there's so many different aspects to working in comedy that are more complicated, I think, than people can imagine. You know, a lot of times they're like, oh, funny actors, funny movie, funny set, funny costumes. But sometimes that's not all true. Sometimes it's like you need to downplay the costumes to not take away from the comedy on set, you know, because immediately you believe this person or not based on the very first time you ever see them. And so if they seem wacky, then you only ever perceive them as wacky. So you can't see their vulnerability, as in like the case of Kristen Wiig again in Bridesmaids. You can't see her, you know, desire to get it right in her own life and her need for connection and love and all these like sweet underlying things that make you fall in love with her character in that film and really want to root for her. You know, it's like, you're almost there. Oh no, don't do that. You know?
And so, what about the process of working with a team of creatives, say, because I think this applies to a lot of different artistic endeavors where you're working with a number of different people. I mean, if you're mm-hmm. a famous sculptor, you work with a gallery, people buy your shit or not. But there are a lot of, especially I think in Hollywood and entertainment and in the fashion industry, there are a lot of situations in which you have to collaborate with a number of people. Mm. How do you keep your creative vision intact, but know when to give? You know, if you have a difficult director or an actor or someone who's very opinionated or, you know, their creative process is going to sort of override yours and now they're telling you how it's going to be and you're like, well, I'm the costume designer. You know, mm-hmm. how do you work with people in terms of the psychology of collaboration when you have a bunch of crazy artists that are all trying to have their voice heard?
I mean, that's an excellent question. You know, it gets easier over time and initially, of course, you want to take things personally. And I think I did a little bit when I was younger that I thought, oh, they don't like my idea. Well, that makes me feel bad. But now I have such a different idea about it and such a different opinion, which is just this openness to see things and hear things from different people's point of views to create something better than my single vision could have ever imagined. And I think that that's where I have been for quite a few years, which is, you know, don't be glued to or stuck in one concept because another concept may end up better. And just hear everyone out and just think of like, what are they trying to say and where are they trying to go to? And can you expound on that? Can you build upon that and create something that is truly unique and different as a result? You know, there are a lot of different egos in the business and a lot of people are vying for, you know, a certain position and that their opinion or their idea is paramount. But at the end of the day, it's only the sum of the parts that make it work. And there's no way to do it without an integral part of the production. So if you don't have the actor, you're not doing it. You don't have the costumes, it's not going to be as good. You don't have the production design, it's not going to work. If there's no cameraman, it's, you know, so every part is significant and important. And it's only the group that can make it great. And I think that if you're just open and willing to listen, it can become something even more amazing.
Yeah. So understanding that that it takes a village, I guess.
Precisely.
Right.
In short, yes.
Yeah. Well, I just find that interesting because there, you know, as I said, there are some creative outlets or careers that, you know, you mostly work by yourself. And I think there's challenges to that because then it is kind of all on you.
Yeah.
And then there's also challenges to working with groups of people where you have to really be, have a high degree of emotional intelligence too, and kind of be able to choose your battles and things like that.
Yeah.
In terms of the egoic side of art, as say, as you've started to achieve success and, you know, you're doing these huge films and, you know, you go to the theater and there's your name and you're going to award shows and all this kind of stuff, you know, whether for you or the talent that you're working with, directors, actors, et cetera, how can one maintain some degree of humility and groundedness and not get caught up in your own hype?
I mean, that, I think that's something that people struggle with. Many people struggle with that because you have all these people around you telling you that you're amazing. And so you want to believe that because in some false way, it makes you have a different sense of self-worth. I think for me, I think my confidence stems from being a loving person. And that doesn't have anything to do with my art per se, but that everything that I do, I approach it from a place of trying to be the most loving and compassionate human I can be. And so I look at it sometimes like, you know, giving myself that love and compassion of saying like, wow, you work so hard on this project and it's being well received. How amazing, like little hug for myself, you know, but there's no way that that project can ever make me feel that good as like the love that comes from knowing that the work and effort and expression of it was something that was truly, you know, from my heart. And I know that sounds probably funny and or odd because
that actually is quite profound.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, no, continue. I like this. This is good. This is good.
You know, I kind of got, and I don't know where it came from, but as a teenager, I got really early on that that whole like money can't buy you love, it can't buy you happiness, you know, accolades are never going to fulfill you in the same way true connection and relationships can. And I knew that from the time I was a teenager for some reason. You know, and so each step of the way, I just always had this attitude of like, I'm going to do everything in a way that truly feels right to me. And if somebody doesn't like it, that's okay because I put my best foot forward because I put my whole heart into something that I did. And people are going to have different opinions. So when I put my whole heart into something that I do, and someone does like it, well, that just feels especially wonderful, you know? And so that's kind of how I've approached each, you know, film or each person I'm styling or each even commercial I'm doing. I'm just there and I'm all in for that moment. I'm all in here with you, you know? And and that feels purposeful and not overwhelming and just kind of focused. And I think that all those other things don't come into play as much, you know, the, you know, how to stay humble. It's like, you know, I think when you're a really loving person, you just like, that's where you live. So it's just not about the accolades pretty much ever. I'm extremely grateful on a daily basis, but I also feel like, wow, I worked really hard and that feels good. Yeah.
I like that it's a way of working backwards, you know, because if you think about, okay, so say I want an Oscar, I want a Grammy, I want a platinum record, I want a million Instagram followers, whatever, you know, external validation I'm looking for. What you're saying is like, skip all of those steps and just give yourself that that validation, right? That love and validation. And then anything else that comes externally is sort of an icing on the cake. I've never thought about it that way, but that really is like the secret to life. Not only, oh, how do I, you know, stay right-sized and humble in creative endeavors and be successful by different metrics, but not let it go to my head. But that right there, I think, is what we were talking about in the kitchen, which again, maybe should have been recorded, but you know, is that looking at the human needs that we're always chasing, and all of us have, you know, a few core human needs, and some of us care about others more than others. And we can be chasing that, you know, the prestige and the fame and all of that, when really what we're looking for is that love and connection and love of self. So that's very cool.
I mean, listen, when I started in this business, just in general, I just had the attitude of, like, as I am right now, push up my sleeves, work really hard.
Push up my sleeves, do the damn interview.
Do the damn interview. Push up my sleeves, work really hard, and eventually it will take me somewhere, because I believe in hard work in the sense that, like, what you put in is what you get out. And sure, there's people who find themselves in these incredible situations just on a lark, but that's where they're supposed to be, you know? And I try not to... I don't have the keeping up with the Joneses kind of mentality. I've recently had this conversation with a couple of different friends of mine, interestingly, you know, that I think in each one of our lives, there's something special and unique. And in each one of our lives, there's something really complicated and hard. And I don't think that there is any way to avoid all of that, you know, or any way to secure the special and unique and diminish the, you know, hard and complicated. It's all the human condition, and we're kind of all in this together. So, and sure, do I get stressed? Of course, I'm human. But I try to take a bunch of deep breaths and just have a little bit of faith, you know, that it's all going to be okay, because I'm attempting to walk in the direction of it always being okay, you know? And that's just the core basics of, you know, being a loving person, I guess. That's more important to me ultimately. So when I meet other loving people, I'm like, hey, so nice to meet you. That's more interesting to me. I'm like, I loved them.
When you're working in Hollywood and there are people who don't share those values, you know, I've tried to explain to people in the years that I was a stylist, and, you know, people say, oh, you know, you worked with so many, you know, rock stars and celebrities and beautiful models and things like that. And I think that people have the misconception that those people that have achieved that kind of success that we publicly put on a pedestal are happy people.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they're so beautiful or successful or talented that they must feel really good about themselves. And I noticed when I was dressing people that oftentimes the more, say, externally beautiful either a woman or a man was that I worked with, or talented or famous, it's uncanny that many times their insecurities and their ego attachments were on par with their level of beauty or success, meaning that some of the most beautiful, successful people were the most insecure. Yeah. I'd be working with a guy and I'm, you know, he'd change and I'm like, God, dude, you're ripped. And he'd be like, dude, do my abs look okay? I mean, like, just psycho level of insecurities. And I'm sitting there going, dude, you have like 5% body fat. You are nuts. What are you talking about? You know,
you're okay.
Yeah.
It's all okay.
But it's like, some of the, you know, maybe it's just the curse of the artist, that they can be so associated that way and, you know, just have these insecurities, and then their ego drives them to then overcome that kind of from the outside in, the opposite of what you were just saying. You know, what do you do when you're dealing with a personality that's just completely an ego and completely insecure and are just a basket case or really difficult or combative? How do you bring out that loving, compassionate side that you obviously have and kind of transmute those situations and overcome conflicts, et cetera, with difficult Hollywood nuts.
Yes. This has happened to me more than once.
I know it has. I know it has.
You know, interestingly, I always start out with my classic MO, which is like get super loving and try to connect.
Yeah.
And be there for that person and be a real support. And just know sometimes that comes out of fear, and it comes out of shame, and it comes out of, you know, just being overwhelmed in general. And that works, let's say, 70% of the time. There's the 30% of the time where there is just no way to connect and no way to turn it around, you know? And that's hard because I want to believe that love does conquer all. It's my, you know, eternal optimism. But sometimes it's the loving of yourself. And so you need to just cut your losses in that moment and just get super professional and make it work. And that is it, you know, and not take it on because this does, the person walked in that way.
Right.
And through the connection, it wasn't able to change. And so they're going to walk out that way. And that's okay because that's not your issue. It's not your problem. It's not your choice. So you're in the moment. You're a professional. Your experience tells you rely on your skill and just do the job that you know is right for the project. You know, and sometimes just the fact that you're relying on your professionalism and it works out. And you're like, okay, we're okay to disagree. That's all right. We're all human and we have different opinions. But I'm going to let you off easy because I can see that you're struggling in life and this doesn't have anything to do with me. So you just guard yourself against the level of aggression or, you know, intensity that's potentially coming your way.
Have you found any correlation between like extreme external beauty and equal insecurity? Or is that just me? Do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
Like
yeah.
Some of the most beautiful, talented people I ever worked with were the gnarliest personalities and had the most sort of struggles where I think people that maybe don't have some of those attributes think, oh, they're so lucky. Like they've got it made. They must have so much confidence and feel so good about themselves. And it's like, not so much.
Well, I have a thought, which is when there's a focus always on the external, you feel depleted in the internal.
Oh,
you know, and so you feel like a fraud, or you feel like there's always somebody, because there is always someone more beautiful, taller, thinner, you know, more toned,
richer, this and that. Oscars,
all of it. There's right. always someone, and right. I always just think that, you know, someone said to me the other day, it's like, you don't have a foundation for a house and there's just the walls and windows. Eventually those walls and windows cannot hold up. The wind comes and they all fall down because there is no foundation. And I think sometimes people forget to build the foundation all the while focusing on the walls and windows.
Right. You know, interesting.
As a concept.
Yeah, that's interesting. There could be a sort of cognitive dissonance there between the messages that you're getting from the public at large, say as a celebrity and the whole world loves you and you have millions of fans, but inside you still have self-worth issues. There's definitely going to be a conflict there that probably sucks. Whereas if you're just a regular person that no one knows about and you work at Walmart and you're struggling through your shit and you know 10 people, you know, you don't have millions of people going, you're this thing and you don't feel like you're that thing.
But also it's like, once you're not that thing anymore, will people still love you? And if people don't love you anymore, what will you do? You know, and that's where, you know, I've been around a lot of actors specifically at sort of the inception of their fame. And there's kind of always a certain pattern, and it takes somebody really grounded as a human to know how to handle what's real and what's not, and to get really clear on who they are as a core human and look at their newfound fame and or their fame in general as something that they're worthy of, you know, because they've done the work. Like I said, you know, they went to their acting classes or they did their singing lessons and they did all the things that to hone their skill to be able to be in that position, to be able to become known for being good at something, you know? And it's a slightly different way to approach it because I think it's very overwhelming, but it's like, it's almost like stop, look at everything around you, walk very slowly and don't just like jump into the tornado, you know? Cause then you're like, whoosh,
yeah, I noticed that working with musicians that become famous and successful really fast. Mm-hmm. They're from some small town and they get a record deal and it hits and they get a single. And then sometimes those were the ones I think that struggled with that more so because it's just, it's overwhelming. And you know, you can, if you watch like those VH1 Behind the Music kind of stories and you see the rock band crash and burn in 3 years or whatever, it's that it's that kind of phenomenon where there's not a psychological framework in place to be able to keep that perspective and to keep that groundedness. In terms of your own life, I mean, I feel like we could be having a conversation about just psychology and spirituality and not even about anything having to do with Hollywood. So you've obviously had some sort of connection to something in terms of your own foundation. Do you have a spiritual practice or do you meditate? Do you, you know, what are the practices that keep you in your happy, loving state that you're in right now?
I definitely meditate. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
I think I also, back to this teenage self, I had this very bizarre epiphany when I was 17 and I remember it like it was yesterday. And I had fallen asleep on my bed and I was like really upset with my mother, you know, as you are, as you do get upset with your mother when you're a teenage girl. And I woke up and I had this thought, it is all up to me, happy or sad, every single day. And then I just felt this overwhelming feeling like, oh, that is scary. It's up to me, happy or sad. And then I got this really freeing feeling, it's up to me, happy or sad. And then I just, right in that moment, decided to wake up every day or as many days as humanly possible and choose to be happy. You know, so I would say between that and meditation, it keeps me as grounded as I can be, you know, and I'm just constantly working on it. I'm just constantly trying not to react, but to stay perfectly still and just be open. And, you know, it works most of the time. And then, you know, people push your buttons and you're like, why did that push my buttons? And where's that coming from? And where's that hurt feeling coming from? And sometimes it's just like, well, I skinned my knee or I, you know, cut myself. Well, that just hurts. And sometimes you're like, wow, that was a wound from somewhere else that I didn't even realize I was still upset about this thing that happened on the very first movie I ever did or something, you know?
Yeah.
And you're like, wow. Good to know. Immediately work on erasing that old issue.
We'll be right back at you after this brief but important announcement. I've been studying not only the cause of modern disease, but also natural treatments for those diseases for over 2 decades. And after all of that research, and everything that I've learned, one of the most important things that I've discovered is the fact that many of our diseases are caused by non-native blue light. That means exposing ourselves to alien light after dark. You know, we've evolved to only see firelight, moonlight, and starlight after dark. But when we invented the incandescent light bulb, which I'm sitting under right now and I'm so grateful for, we basically trashed our health. So if you're someone that cares about your health, it's really important that you start protecting yourself from blue light at night. And that means all the white light all around you. It's really easy to do that thanks to a company called Blue Blocks. If you go to blueblocks.com, that's BLUBLOX, you will find a variety of eyewear, much of it very attractive, also have prescription glasses, reading glasses, and just regular glasses that protect you from blue light. And these glasses they make block 100% of the light in the negative range. In other words, don't tell your brain that it's noon when it's midnight, guys. Really, really easy fix. And the health problems that result from this exposure to blue light are endless. I don't want to use the C word, and I'm not trying to like use scare tactics, but it's honestly just the reality of it. So many of our modern diseases come from exposure to this light at night. It really trashes your sleep and melatonin, neurotransmitters, hormones. It totally sucks. So get out in the sun as much as you can safely. Get natural light in your eyes. And then at night, protect your brain and your eyes from blue light using Blue Blocks. That's BLUBLOX, blueblocks.com. Here's the really good news. If you use the code LIFESTYLIST at checkout, you're going to save 15% off your protective blue blocking eyewear. And now back to the interview. I recently interviewed Mastin Kipp, who's a big trauma specialist. And I mean, so many of these interviews, I learned so much from you guys, you guests, people. But he was really going into past trauma, you know, childhood traumas and otherwise, just traumas that we pick up along the way, whether it's, you know, for me, like getting bit by a dog. It's no wonder that when dogs bark, I get really irritated because, you know, that was a sign that I was about to get killed or mauled by a fucking dog. Yeah. You know,
but interestingly, you have an adorable dog
I had to overcome that. Okay. I mean, I used to say this all the time. I hate dogs. I was like, And like, if you hate dogs, you're basically categorically evil. You know what I mean? Like, that's like saying, I hate children. You know, it's like, how can you hate dogs? Dogs are so cute.
Yeah.
But it's because of the trauma. But I've really been looking at that and applying that in my interpersonal relationships. You know, someone had a situation the other day in which someone didn't appear to be responding to a text message as quickly as I thought they should, right? And I was like, God, this is popping in my mind a lot. I know intellectually this is not a big deal. They literally probably didn't even get my text because I live in freaking Laurel Canyon and my phone doesn't work up here, which I like.
Yeah.
From an EMF standpoint. But it's like, I know, dude, your mind is making something up that doesn't exist, but it's still, there was a feeling in me that I couldn't shake.
Yeah.
And then I looked back and saw some other situations in which, you know, I had been hurt and things like that. And I was like, oh, I can see that. And it did help me to unravel and then communicate that to the person. And luckily they were woke enough and compassionate enough to be like, oh, you know, it wasn't the thing you thought, but thank you. And I'll be aware that you have that issue because it really was my issue. They didn't do anything wrong. And I think this is really one of the huge keys is to have that level of instantaneous introspection where you can see there's a trigger, buttons being pushed. Why? Is it because this is a real thing happening right now? Or is it a thing that's, you know, from when I was 5 or 25 or whatever the case may be?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much power in that. And then working on, you know, unhooking the original subconscious trauma so that you can be free of those triggers. There's things that used to trigger me that don't anymore because I got to the root of it and really worked on it, you know?
Well, the other thing about what you're saying specifically is that initially you were very like concerned with the outcome of having sent the text because you probably, there was a vulnerability there, right? So you needed to get a reply. But what happened as a result of you having the introspection is that you actually got a different level of connection with this person who said, I think is really compassionate and loving, like, now that I know that's of issue to you, let me show you how compassionate I can be. Like, That's even better than a reply.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. You're so right on, because and this is something Mastin talked about, which I think his show will probably come out before this one. So people have heard this, but we were talking about those subconscious wounds, and I'm like, okay, I get that. I've known that, but Mastin, how do we fix it? Like, how do I get rid of those? And he said, you do it through relationship, through vulnerability and intimacy. When you're with someone who's conscious enough to meet you there, exactly what you just said, that if that person has enough love and empathy and compassion themselves, and you can vulnerably communicate to them what you're being triggered by, then that's how you actually break the cycle of that trauma. You need another person to do it. And I was like, whoa. And I've been experiencing that as of late. And that's exactly what happened in that situation. And not only can the other person perhaps be a little more cognizant of your issues and be sensitive to them, but I think you really can overcome them through that vulnerability, because then, you know, those things that are living in the shadows kind of are brought to light, and they prove to be phantoms that aren't really real. They're just weird little psychological tics that we have. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing to be able to practice.
Yeah. I mean, it's all work in progress, right? Practice is the optimal word for that, because I think, you know, it's like I live and work and move around in an industry where, you know, there are a lot of difficult or complicated people sometimes. And obviously, I chose that, you know, for whatever reason, because there is all this opportunity for creativity and connection. And I like the challenge of something too. I love the challenge of, as I always say, like making something from nothing. You know, that feels so rewarding to me. Like, here's three scraps of fabric and a pair of scissors. Now, if you could make something from that, and that's always been really fun for me. Like, what could I conceive of that sort of MacGyver version of, of something has always been really interesting to me. But I kind of take that metaphor, you know, deeper, which is in every aspect of every job I do, whether it's costume designing for film and creating these characters, or it's celebrity styling, or it's private styling, you know, all these things, I'm looking to create something that wasn't there before. And as a result, I'm trying to push myself into a place of further creativity by way of filling voids. Sometimes those voids are like, oh, we haven't seen this character before, so what would this character be like? And it's something simple like that. But sometimes it's, in private styling, a really deep thing. This person has never been able to connect to the core place in them that they could ever find confidence or just a sense of overall well-being. And so you're helping them through clothing, even though at the end of the day, the clothing doesn't actually matter. But through the clothing, they're able to see themselves slightly differently. And over time, they're like, okay, now this is where my comfort zone lies. So now I can truly be myself. And somehow the clothing worked its way in to be able to feel comfortable enough every day to even connect with ourselves. And so these voids and these challenges on every aspect, whether they're creative or psychological, are something that I really love that part of what I do. And so the complications are just part of it because we are complicated. You know, the difficulties are part of it because there are difficulties. You know, the accolades are part of it because hopefully if you work really hard, people will say, hey, good job. You know, and if it's beyond that, how amazing. You know, it's kind of like that.
This brings me into the psychology of clothes, which I find really fascinating. You know, I noticed, for example, okay, so you came in and I'm just wearing a t-shirt. I'm running around. I just moved in this house. You know, everything's kind of chaotic. I finally organized my closet, which was a huge relief. So at least I know if I need a t-shirt or a jacket, I know where it is.
Find it.
In a box. But we were about to record and I set up all my gear and then I just had a t-shirt on. You know, it's kind of a cool t-shirt. It's, you know, it's decent. It has somewhat of a design element. But as we were about to record, I'm like, oh, hell no, I need to put on a jacket. Like, I just don't feel right. And then I went and put on my favorite Dior blazer.
And it looks good on you.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah, I think I found this at Lowman's on sale and it was like...
I wish Lowman's was on.
It was one of the... You never find men's stuff really on sale at those stores, but I walked in, I was like, what the hell? It was like a whole tux. And I was like, oh my God, a Dior tux.
And it's
tux.
Your size, you're like, lucky day.
Yeah, very much so. But I've worn the hell out of this thing. But the minute I put this on, I was just like, oh God, I feel so much better. I just feel so much more put together and confident. And it's... There's two sides of that. There's like... There's a superficiality to like knowing, ooh, I have a Dior blazer on and I want everyone to see the label and like all of that kind of bullshit that is the handbag industry and, you know, like...
Sure.
But there's been studies, I don't know if you're aware of this, like with like bootleg handbags. So if you have a fake Chanel bag, psychologically on one level, you know that versus if you have the $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 real Chanel bag, like you feel better. There's like all these weird things to it. So
I
it's
can
like,
understand that.
Where does the...
Well, that's shame and fraud and self-worth. It's complicated.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, in terms of, I guess, you know, working with celebrities, and working on a film, but you know, as you call it, a private styling or personal styling, or even just dressing yourself, it's like, I find there's just this fascinating phenomenon of where the, you know, the ego attachment to like how you look and what you're wearing ends and where kind of a healthy self-esteem comes from of just feeling well put together. I mean, if I go out on the town and take some meetings and I'm wearing sweats, I just don't feel as good about myself and put together and confident as if I have, you know, a nice outfit on that is well tailored and well designed and is of quality. You know what I mean? So what's your perspective on designer labels and ego and, you know, feeling good about yourself and not being dependent on having the Chanel, but knowing that the Chanel makes you feel better, you know?
Oh, well, I have so much to say
about
this.
Yeah, there's
a lot
on that. I mean, it's a huge topic, but I find it so interesting. And I think you'd be a great person to give us some feedback on that.
Well, it's essentially my entire styling philosophy that shapes of items of clothing that we wear is what helps us get into our comfort zone. So for example, you know, because the shape of that jacket, whether it was Dior or it was anyone else, expensive or not expensive, you would put this jacket on and you'd be like, this suits me. And that would make you feel great, you know? And it's, and you put on the full tuxedo and you feel dressed and ready to go. All the different things that you wear, those shapes that make up your silhouette, that's what truly makes you feel comfortable and confident and many days in a row of feeling that comfortable and confident, that leads to a general feeling of well-being and that thought that I can go anywhere, I can do anything, I can talk to anyone, I can connect with people, I can do this amazing job that was offered to me, I can meet this incredible person that I've always long admired. I, you know, because day after day, you felt comfortable and confident enough in the shapes that made up your silhouette. Now, to add to that, the thing that's brilliant about many designer items of clothing is that they were made with an artistic intention, you know? So, Hedy Slimane, who made your jacket, you know, he approached the, you know, at one time the Dior and another time the Saint Laurent and, you know, at another time Celine and different houses of fashion that he's been connected to in with an artistic approach of that he would create that silhouette for you without having to work hard on your part.
Without having to go to the gym.
It.
And build shoulders.
Right. But
like,
you know,
perfect shoulder pads. Thank you.
It's like you found the shapes and you knew it instinctually. This makes me feel good. And then you connected with this artist who made it. And the fact that like you fit into the ideal of what that artist was creating makes you feel even better. And sometimes it's like, and you were able to get this jacket, in your case at Lohmann's, which is so cool. But in many cases, even at the Dior boutique, you know, it's like the ability to go in and get something that looks that good on you and feels that good. And it was made with an artistic intention. And that label makes you feel that much more that you have arrived in the place in which you want to be. You know, and it's deeply psychological. You know, I'm not a fan of labels per se, but I appreciate fashion from an artistic point of view. I also am a huge fan of labels because they are made with artistic intention. So 9 times out of 10, I'm going to go to a particular designer boutique. I'm going to find the exact shape I want because that much thought and effort was put into it. You know, so, but I famously am like, I'll go to a thrift store and find something for $5.50 that I like equally as well as something I bought at any designer boutique because the shape doesn't lie. You know, the shape is either good or it's not. So sometimes you're going into a designer boutique and the artistic intention is truly just art. And as a result, putting on that piece doesn't work for you, but you can appreciate it and you can admire it and go, that was so great, but it doesn't make me feel good, you know, and that's okay because that doesn't mean anything except for the way that that was made didn't match up with you at that moment in your life, you know, or that size you are or that shape you were looking for or that place you were going. You know, there's so many things that go into it. You know, I support fashion 100% because it's art, you know? And I support also styling from the point of view of it's all about how you feel. And if those pieces don't support you in feeling your best, giving you the limitless possibilities of anything you want to do in your life and any place you want to go and anyone you might want to meet, then that piece is not right for you at that time. I mean, my favorite part of my job is private styling because helping people create that core foundation of the fact that clothing can support you to be everything you want to be, that doesn't have anything to do with labels. But then also to appreciate something beautifully made with artistic intention and incredible fabrics. That's also like, that's a plus. It's an added bonus.
It is. Yeah. I've explained that to clients to a degree. You don't really explain it, but just show up with clothes and then here, try the H&M suit, then try the Prada suit. Like it's going to feel different. But I've explained that to School of Style students over the years and to friends, like, you know, if they don't really understand, well, if I can go get this dress for $80 and then go get it over here in $800, like, why would I pay the $800? And I'm always like, you need to go into Barney's, you know, go to the third floor and just start touching stuff and opening it up and looking at the seams and really having that tactile experience. And I think for me, when I was styling, that's when it started to click for me, when I'd get samples sent from New York or from Paris and I'd unpack the FedEx and be like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
Because it's just different. There's a different energetic quality to it and appreciating it from the artistic point of view that somebody like got some fabric swatches and started sketching and, you know, made something out of nothing that was meant for something more than to just make money. Right?
Yeah.
Like the designer's intention was to create something artistic that makes people happy and makes people feel good.
Yes. And I think, you know, one of the biggest disconnects is that what we see on the runway and what we see, let's say, on billboards, and you know, that isn't always synonymous with what we should be wearing. As a matter of fact, most times not. You know, so it's hard because people see that and they think, you know, I should look like that. I should wear that. And it's always like what they need from the outside to make them feel good. But you cannot fabricate confidence, because that's arrogance, right?
Mm, ooh, that's good. That's a good tweetable. That's
Lisa
good, that's
said,
a great quote.
I just made it up right now.
That's good. That's good. Say that again.
We cannot fabricate confidence, because that's arrogance.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what I said? I think so.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it's like it's a counterfeit confidence. Yeah.
Right.
That's good.
And that's disingenuous. And then you know you're being disingenuous, and then you feel like a fraud, and then you have a lot of shame.
And that's when
it all just keeps going and going.
That's
and going.
When you're like flaunting the label just to be like, hey, I'm worthy, like me,
yes.
Please accept me, give me approval.
Don't really feel good in it,
right.
But you're hoping that's going to make you feel good.
Right.
But instead, we should just let go of all those preconceived ideas and just try stuff on and go, hey, does that really make me feel good? I mean, in all reality, this jacket looks great on you. The fact that it's Dior and you found it at Lowman, it's just cool.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, it's funny though. Yeah. And I actually am kind of a label whore. Like,
yeah.
Like you could hand me something and I'll try it on. And if you're like, that's Dior, I'm like, oh, this is dope. And then if you trick me, you say, oh, that's H&M, I'll be like, oh yeah, no, I don't like it. But my all-time favorite black skinny jeans are Top Man. Top Man makes the best stretchy skinny jeans ever. And I recently actually threw mine away when I moved in because they were beginning to get holes.
Yeah.
But, you know, those didn't have to be like some designer. They just fit really well and they were so comfortable. And it was like cheating because I'm basically wearing leotards and no one knows it. They appear to be jeans, but they're super stretchy and thin.
And they're comfortable.
Amazing. Yeah. But if those same jeans were Saint Laurent, I would like them even more because psychologically I know they're like kind of worth more.
Yeah. You know? Also, this is part of a bigger question, which is, let me style you for a minute.
Okay.
Do you have a lot of clothes or a few?
I would say a lot.
You have a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have
a
small walk-in closet full.
Yeah. And what is your intention that each piece of clothing in your closet is either something extremely special or it fits you really well? It's a special artistic piece or it fits you well?
Now, as I'm...
Or in general, like, is it those two things?
As I'm creeping up on 50, comfort is really important. So there are things... I have like a Rick Owens moto jacket that's beautiful. I've worn it 4 times because it's so uncomfortable.
Right.
The armholes are super small. I can't drive in it. It's annoying, but it looks great.
Yeah.
So it's more about like feeling that I'm able to move and be comfortable, but still fit my kind of archetype costume.
Yeah.
I have kind of 2 archetypes, the fashion-y school style guy with the blazer and that thing that's a little rock and roll. And then my earthy kind of, you know, more true to my heart,
right.
Which is not dressing for work, but just kind of how I dress. So
right.
It's like a broadcast to the world to say like, hey, this is what I'm into. This is my tribe. This is my vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to move it in and not feel confined.
Yeah. And I imagine just hearing what you're saying is like, you know, what you're looking for is these pieces that fit something special, artistically made, something comfortable, and something that makes you look good. And so when something hits all 3 of those, you feel especially good. And when something hits 2 of them, you feel good. And probably 1, you don't get it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
You know, so, and so that just tells you like what your intention is for the way that you dress and how that relates to your personal style. You know, a lot of people don't have 3 categories. Most people have like 1 category. It was Dior. And as a result, it felt good. You know, well, that probably doesn't work, you know, or they just say, I only want to be comfortable. I don't care what I wear. Also does not work, you know? So you have to start to understand yourself, what it is that you need to help support your own life. And then, you know, I feel somewhat the same, for example, as you do, which is I like to be dressed because I don't know what my where my day is going to take me. I don't know who I'm going to meet. I don't know what kind of experience I'm going to have. And my day sometimes changes minute to minute. So I like to be dressed that I can feel comfortable in any setting. I might be going shopping at Target, and then the next minute I'm going to Barney's, and then the next minute I got a call to go and meet a famous actor, musician, politician, you name it. And I want to be like, I don't want to say no to that opportunity. I don't want to say no to any opportunity.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And one of my clients said to me, which I absolutely love this, which is, she said, I don't want my clothes to stop me from doing anything I want to do in my life or achieving anything I imagine I can. I was like,
that's
I am behind you.
Yeah, I like that. That's good. That's a good way to like approach your closet in the morning. You know, it's like, yeah. How can I dress that's not going to be restrictive in any way, psychologically or physically?
Mm-hmm.
Although, you know, there were years in my life where I was willing to dress in clothing that was so uncomfortable and even painful just to look cool. And that's, I think, when I was much more egoically identified with having a certain image. And if I, there was like a period where I was so self-obsessed that I literally felt like there were like cameras on me, even though I was just a regular guy, but there was like people were watching wherever I went. I mean, it was that narcissistic, you know? And so I had to just be like, I had to be the fucking coolest looking guy in the room wherever I went. And I wouldn't even go into Whole Foods unless I was completely decked out. And then there was a period where I started to become more free. And I was just like, you know what? I'm going to go out in my dirty clothes from yesterday. You know, I kind of went to the other extreme. And now I think back to a balance. But, you know, I don't even wear shoes now. I only pretty much wear sandals unless it's freezing because when I was younger, I always wore like these Beetle boots and stuff. When I was a little rock and roll dude playing in bands, and I pretty much like Chinese foot binding kind of warped my feet, and my feet are like permanently sort of tweaked from that. So I don't even like wearing shoes, but I was over by John Varvatos on Melrose and Robertson the other day. And I saw this young 20s, like really good looking kid walking by, super rock and roll. And he had these great, like pointy brown suede boots. And I was like, God, those look dope.
Yeah.
With skinny jeans. And I was like, oh man, I should wear those. And I'm like, nope. Been there, done that. I'm like, dude, wait till you're 40. Your feet are going to be aching. You know, your shoes are not shaped like a foot. They're backwards. Your foot is not pointy at the front. It's pointy at the back, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, now I think there's a, like you said, it's like, how can I be comfortable and also feel good about what I'm wearing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But also I kind of say to all my clients, like, I want someone to come up and say like, hey, Luke, you look amazing. How are you? It's so good to see you. Look, like, what's going on? You look incredible. And then second or third be like, are those, you know, Topshop jeans and or Topman jeans and a Dior jacket? Like, isn't that cool? But that should be second or third or fourth because... Right. This focus here is so much about confidence, and this is so much about it's either adding to or taking away from who you are. And if it's taking away from who you are, it's not the right thing for you.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
So,
love it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, we're about coming to... the time when you have to get on to your next appointment. But I want to make sure that we cover Style Fund because I think this is a really interesting project. So give me a little background on that and where that's headed and then anything else that you're excited about and kind of what's up for you professionally in the near future.
So Amy Schumer and I work together and I met Amy on Trainwreck. Judd Apatow had introduced us. And when I first met Amy, I could tell she had never had a really great experience with fashion and styling and, you know, costume design and any of it. And I could tell she was sort of like, this is probably not going to work for me, but it's a necessary evil, you know? So I didn't say too much. I just said, pleasure to meet you and I'll see you in New York. And we were going to shoot in New York. So she came in for her first fitting and my entire concept of her first fitting was to find things that she felt so good in that she was able to then get out of herself and get into the character of of a girl that's a train wreck. And what does that even mean? Because there's all of us have, you know, good and bad and, you know, perfect and imperfect. And, you know, so to me, a train wreck is just a normal person that maybe like went a little down the path of not taking care of themselves in the way that our best self would, you know?
Yeah.
So she came in for the first fitting, and by the end of the fitting, she was like, what just happened? And she was like, I've never tried on clothes that even fit me before. I didn't even know I could look like this or feel like this. And, you know, so we really started talking about the psychology of it. Like, you know, you tried on this and I could tell your posture changed. So we tried on another thing like that. And over time, you know, as we started to talk about it, she was like, I feel so now not defensive about what I'm wearing, but I feel so good that I want to go places and do things. She said, you know, for a while, I didn't even want to do my favorite thing in the world, which is do stand up, because I didn't know what to wear and I didn't feel comfortable.
Oh, damn.
And pretty soon, as the course of the film went on, I found that, you know, now the clothes didn't really even matter so much because she was feeling so confident that she knew what it was that made her feel good. So now she could choose to do it or not, you know? So by the time the film was over, we decided we would start working together full time. And as a result of working together full time, she asked me to help style her sister. And that was a fun project. And I love Kim and other people that she knew. And she kept bringing me people along, you know, to see me. And we decided, you know what, she was like, I need to share this with everyone. How could we do that? And she's like, if someone like me who said that I hated fashion or fashion wasn't for me or I didn't feel good enough, if I could turn that around and make it work for me and feel great about it, she's like, anyone can do that then. And how do we share that? And so, interestingly, my husband came up with the concept of Style Fund and the name.
Damn.
And he was like, this is a great idea. You and Amy should definitely do it. And so we called it Style Fund. It just felt right. And we just set out on telling people that there was a different way to look at fashion, that fashion itself was art, but using clothing as a tool for our confidence and well-being was at our each one of our disposal. You know, we could all do it. We just needed to learn how. You know, you are a stylist, former stylist, still a stylist, in life in general. And so you put something on and you're like, this suits me, you know, instinctually. But so many people don't know that and they don't know how to get to that. So, you know, a lot of it was just an educational platform to teach people that A, clothing can support you. B, if you get the right clothing, you can get out of your own way to do whatever it is that you want to do in life. And then C, it's like, how do you recreate that every single day or as many days as possible that you create a pattern of feeling a general sense of well-being day in and day out. And then you can get to kind of where Amy got to, which is the clothes don't even matter anymore because she can choose. She wants to wear sweats one day. She loves sweats. The next day she wants to wear, you know, a gown. The next day she's wearing a pair of jeans and a sweater. The next day she's wearing a dress and so on and so forth, because it all helps support her. And she, you know, flipped it around. It's no longer like what looks good on me, but what do I want to wear? And so, you know, there's a real process to it. And it's essentially kind of what I touched on briefly, which is the shapes that make us feel good. And the sum of those shapes make up our silhouette. And that silhouette is individual to us because proportion is unique to each person, like a thumbprint, you know, like a fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
You might take, you know, two women, both 5'7". Both wear a size 8. Those two women do not wear the same clothes. They're about the same height, weight, etc. One of them has long legs. The other one has a long torso. One of them, you know, is a little bit busty and the other one is not. You know, we're so unique, each of us, and we have such a unique proportion. And when we find the proportion that really works for us, that's what we should be wearing. That's where the confidence lies. And then I'll ask some of my clients after, you know, some time has gone by, oh, what did you wear that night that you had such a good time? Oh, I can't actually remember even what I was wearing. Because every day then is just a good time, you know, because you're not fidgeting with yourself and you're not feeling less than, you're not feeling vulnerable or like a fraud or arrogant instead of confident. You're not feeling any of those things. It's just like, you just can get on with it already because the clothes are fundamental, like brushing your teeth. You know, we've got to do it. Like so far, no nudity allowed, you know, so we've all got to put on something. But if we're going to put on something, like with the intention as Style Fund and my styling philosophy ultimately, you know, kind of says, is that let's do it in a way that supports us as individuals. Let's find the shapes that make up our silhouette, that make us so comfortable and so confident that we're able to do anything.
And is Style Fund like a learning platform or a nonprofit or a business? Like what is the mechanics of how it operates?
So we currently are doing two things. One is events. So we have an event. We had an event with the Goodwill of Southern California where it was sort of the perfect place to start because the Goodwill has an incredible program that was helping women either coming from homelessness or living in shelters or coming out of the military that were looking to get back into the workforce. So I went with my assistants and we pulled a ton of great clothes from Goodwill. And we had a styling event.
Oh, and that's great.
We styled 50 women.
Wow.
We gave them about, you know, 4 to 5 looks each. And we just essentially explained how the shape of these things were going to help support them in what they were trying to do, which was get back to work.
Right.
You know, and it was an amazing experience. And from that point, we just built upon that and continued to have events.
Oh, cool.
So it's a one-on-one like that.
Yeah.
And then also it's an educational training platform. I mean, we hope to go into every retail establishment all around the world and help teach the salespeople how to even help their clients that come in to connect with themselves, to know why to buy certain shapes and why to buy certain things, because it's going to help support them in their life. Not just because it's a label per se, or just because it's cheap maybe, or inexpensive, right? But because it's the right thing for them. And then it's like, once you start getting enough right things for you, you can make the decision like, oh, this is really fun. This jacket fits me so well. And it's Dior, which was artistically made. Like, this is cool. This is even better.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool.
So yeah, so we're doing those two things and it's been a really fun experience. And we get the most amazing results of people going, wow, my perception really changed. I see myself and my abilities and my experience differently. I had a really sweet woman was one of my favorite who, you know, raised her hand when Amy and I were, you know, kind of conducting the first initial chat about what Style Fund is and what the process was going to be for that day. And she said, you know, what if I'm too sexy? And I was like, I love it. You know, because what she was trying to say is she wanted to express herself. She wanted to be authentic and be herself. But for whatever reason, she was getting negative feedback from going in to try to get jobs, for example. And, you know, I just helped her bring it back to a core feeling. And it didn't necessarily need to play out in what she was wearing for that particular, you know, interview or that process, and to watch her own transformation, to know that feeling that sexy and feeling that good was something really incredible and special for her, that she could carry that with her no matter where she went and what she did. And it really, I loved hearing from her just about the job she got and the experience she was having and just, you know, the shift in how she carried herself. And it was really, it's been really rewarding. Doing Style Fund has been great. And I'm so grateful to Amy, truly, for being my partner in this, because she's been such a great voice for, to champion men and women alike, to be able to be authentic and be an individual and be themselves. And through this process, you know, use it as a tool for their confidence.
Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. That's really good work. I love that. And also just from a business standpoint, it's pretty cool to get into retail and be able to help, you know, help those businesses effectively serve their customers too. Is cool. That's another neat angle to it. All right, we got to get you out of here. I'm 10 minutes behind, but I do have one final question, and you can answer this one quickly so we can get you on to your next appointment. You've taught me so much about the psychology of style and everything that has you've talked about today. Who have been three teachers or teachings that have influenced you and your life or your work that our audience might be able to go check out?
That's a good one. I read this quote, I might get it wrong, from the author and poet David White. And he said, the antidote to exhaustion is not rest, but wholeheartedness.
Damn.
Right?
Interesting.
That's really affected me. I kind of just carry that around with me everywhere I go. I've been so lucky to have so many people who have helped support me along the way. You know, everyone from my godmother who helped me get my first job working in film on the Phil Collins video, to, you know, directors and producers that I've met that believed in me and gave me opportunities, to my husband, who is incredibly supportive of me and extremely loving. And I feel like I no longer walk alone, you know, and that's incredibly comforting. I have so many amazing people in my life, truly, that like every step of the way, I feel like I have people I can turn to. I also will give a special shout out to Shauna Robertson, who was a producer. She used to be Judd Apatow's producing partner, and I've done a ton of movies with her. But Shauna is just a force of nature. And from the time we first met when we were very young, we met on this movie called High School High, and I was in my early 20s and she was maybe in her late teens even. I mean, she's just a dynamo, you know. From the moment we met all through our long friendship, she has just been such a support to me and always helping me find my way to good experiences and amazing people, and just continues to this day to be someone who I can point to more than anyone else in my career that has been helpful to me and been, despite her being a bit younger than I am, an incredible mentor, and just always with her heart in the right place and her no-nonsense approach to things, which I truly admire. You know, heart and honesty.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. Heart and brains together make a powerful ally.
Yeah.
And where can we find you, website, social media, anything you want to point people to?
Lisa Evans Style is my Instagram handle. And
L-E-E-S-A, by the way, folks.
That is correct. I blame hippie parents. you know, most recently I started a clothing line, La Cloud, because Amy's always asking if it feels like a cloud, and if not, she doesn't want to wear it. So La Cloud, which is also supporting Style Fund and helping us move towards reaching as many people as possible.
Cool.
And yeah, I love sounds a little cliche. I really do love being of service. And I feel like this information is helpful to people, and it just changes our perspective about what is possible for each one of us.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that perspective on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Yeah, this was fun.
Great to meet you. I'm glad we're able to finally get this done.
Yeah.
You're the first person to record in the new Laurel Canyon location of the studio. So it's like half built, but it worked.
I love it.
We've got our YouTube video done and a great episode done. So thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you so much. This was fun.
So that brings another episode of the Lifestylist podcast to a close. Listen, you don't want to miss next week's episode with Danielle and Whitney, the founders of Sakara Life. That's a fantastic show all about the empire that they've built. Really great story from two really great ladies. Let's give a shout out to our sponsors. First off, we've got Blue Blocks. Use the code Lifestylist at blueblocks.com and save 15% off your blue blocking protective eyewear. That actually sounds really dorky. Actually, this is a fashion-based episode that we just listened to. So get over to blueblocks.com. That's spelled B-L-U-B-L-O-X. And you can see some actually really cool-looking blue blockers. You know, back in the day, they were all ugly. Now they're getting actually wearable in public, which is nice. Then I'd also like to thank our friends at Four Sigmatic. You can go to foursigmatic.com/thelifestylist and save 15% off using the code thelifestylist on all their fantastic medicinal mushrooms and instant coffee and all the rad herbal wares that they have over at Four Sigmatic. And then last but certainly not least, let's thank Organifi. That's Organifi.com/Luke. Save 20% off their green powders, their gold powders, all them powders using the code Lifestylist. That's Organifi.com/Luke. And as we thank our sponsors, I'd like to thank our main sponsor, and that is you. If you're still hearing my voice right now, you are everything to me. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting what for me is the most fun career I've ever had. And I've had quite a few at this point, but it really just brings me great pleasure to be able to explore all of these different aspects of the human experience and not only enrich my life, but in so doing, find the healing, find the growth that I'm looking for and then share it with you. But it wouldn't be possible without you listening. And on that note, when you support our sponsors by purchasing their amazing products and getting that benefit that you get of these exclusive discount codes, it helps to make this show possible. So I want to thank our editors over at Podcast Masters who run this whole operation for me, Noel Mullins, my graphic designer, Tati Mello, my show producer, and all of the different people that make this possible. I feel like I just won an Academy Award. I'm getting the Academy Award vibe from having Lisa on the show. But seriously, when I do these outros, I'm always just like, oh man, someone's going to be hearing this. And, you know, hopefully, and I trust that if you made it this far, you've derived some benefit out of this conversation that just took place. But I just always feel compelled to really thank you directly, because as I sit here in my room in this great old sort of plantation house in McLeod, California, with Mount Shasta up above, and having just spent an amazing weekend with John Weiland, as I said in the intro, I don't know if I would be here if I hadn't had a podcast to have John on the show and really related to his work, you know? So I really feel like I'm on this journey and you, the listener, are my co-pilot. We're in one of those old-fashioned motorcycles, you know, and you're in the sidecar, or perhaps you're driving. Let's just say that, you know, maybe you're a better driver than I and I'm in the sidecar and you're taking me for a ride. But it's really neat to be able to have these experiences as I did this weekend, where I meet tons of listeners to the show. They're just a bunch of dudes are at the thing. Hey, I love your podcast. I'm going, wow, I'm really starting to reach a lot of people. And you, the listener, make that possible by supporting the show and sharing it with your friends. You know, I love when you go on Instagram. By the way, you can follow me there at Luke Story. And I love when I go on Instagram and I see in the stories, people have screen grabbed their podcast player, or they, you know, are giving a message about what they learned from the show and how it's inspiring them and helping them. And I just want you to know that every time you share it, every time you do a post, that I notice, I thank you, I honor you. And without you, I would just literally be sitting here talking to a microphone by myself. So I'm currently by myself, but by the time this goes out on Tuesday, which is 2 days from the time I'm recording this outro, this will hit about, I don't know, I think right now 35,000 people or so, which is just phenomenal, you know, to be able to have a little recorder sitting on my bed and a laptop and sit here and basically have my own radio station and do whatever I want to do. So I want to talk about what it's like to use clothing to express yourself and what it's like to be a costume designer and the creative process behind that this week. And then next week, why clean organic food and living is so supportive to not only our health, but to the planet, to encourage people to use options like Saqqara Life, where you can just order the best clean food delivered right to your house if you're so situated to do so financially and geographically, and things like that. So I just, you know, I discover these things in the world, and if I think they have meaning and they have value and they'd be useful for you, I work my ass off to make sure I present it to you in a way that's digestible, relatable, authentic, real, honest, and in a way that you can then walk away from the podcast and apply to your life. So I trust that this episode with Lisa Evans achieved some of that for you. And perhaps you might think about the way you dress on a deeper level. So thanks again for listening. I'll catch you on next week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe using your podcast app so that each and every week, the Lifestylist podcast is delivered directly to your eardrums free of charge. This episode of the Lifestylist Podcast was produced by PodcastMasters.net.